Okay. Ezra 7. We didn't get as far as I wanted to last week. So I'm going to try and make up a little time this week and finish chapter 7 and 8. We've only got three classes left if I looked at the calendar right. And we've still got 7, 8, 9, and 10 to go through. So I don't want to take away from God's Word, but yet I want to try and get through the book as best as I can. Last week, as we started in chapter 7, we realized that, of course, we're now in the reign of King Artaxerxes. And Ezra now is at the forefront of what we're looking at. Ezra now, it's like we're in first-person dialogue. Ezra's writing about the things that he knows about and is going on in his life. And I just want us to look again in verse 6. Ezra goes up from Babylon. He's a scribe. He's skilled in the law of Moses. He's given, if you will, anything that he wants from the king. The king is willing to give Ezra anything that he asks for. And of course, I tried to bring this out. It says because, you know, the good hand of the Lord is on Ezra. But who's really in control here? It's God molding, if you will, the king's heart and making him understand that he needs to listen to Ezra. So Ezra has this, I guess the king is fond of him. Let's just put it that way. And so in verse 9 it says, "For on the first month he began to go up from Babylon, to the first of the fifth month he came to Jerusalem, because the good hand of God was with him." So again, we're seeing that the good hand of God is with Ezra. But where I want us to look is, he's going to make a trip to Jerusalem. And if I've done the calculations right, I might be wrong, and Carrie, tell me I'm wrong. It's about 900 miles. But it's a long journey. And it's going to take a long time. And the interesting thing to me is in verse 10, we also get, "For Ezra had set his heart to study the law of the Lord and practice it, and to teach his statutes and ordinances to Israel." So in all that's taking place, I want you to see why God's hand is with him. Why he's given, if you will, the ability to be the scribe that he is, to be learned in all of the law, to understand and to be able to not only write it, but to understand it and to teach it. He set his heart that he's going to live for God. And there was a couple of scriptures that I don't know that I brought them out last week, but it brought a couple of things to mind whenever I was reading that. In Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, Paul writes that he urges the brethren, by the mercies of God, that they present their bodies a holy and a living sacrifice acceptable to God, and that's their spiritual service. And I got to thinking, that's much like what Ezra is trying to do. He's dedicated his life to living for God. And that's the mindset that we really as Christians ought to be having, is that we're dedicated to the Lord, that it's our spiritual service, that we're willing to sacrifice and do anything that's needed to be acceptable and righteous and holy before God. And then, of course, in verse 11, Paul talks about not lagging behind in diligence, but being fervent in spirit and serving the Lord, you know. So my thought was, we really need to look at our hearts. That's what Ezra, his heart is set. He's made it his mindset and his purpose that he is going to serve the Lord, and he's not just going to serve the Lord and you know, read the Word. You know, it's wonderful to read the Word, but to put it into practice and then to be able to teach it and you know, to do whatever is needed to help others come and know, you know, God's Word. So I want to continue on. So then it goes about this letter. This letter is going to be sent, and I'm going to read. It's kind of lengthy. Bear with me. But I want to read verse 11 through 28. Kind of get the text for us. So beginning in verse 11, it says, "Now this is the copy of the decree which King Artaxerxes gave to Ezra the priest, the scribe, and learned in his words of the commandments of the Lord and his statutes to Israel. Artaxerxes, king of kings, to Ezra the priest, the scribe of the law of God, of heaven, perfect peace. And now I have issued a decree that any of the people of Israel and the priests and the Levites in whom are in my kingdom who are willing to go to Jerusalem may go with you. For as much as you are sent by the king and his seven counselors to inquire concerning Judah and Jerusalem, according to the law of your God, which is in your hand, and to bring the silver and gold, which the king and his counselors have freely offered to the God of Israel, whose dwelling is in Jerusalem, with all the silver and gold, which you shall find in the whole province of Babylon, along with freewill offering of the people and of the priest, who offered willingly for the house of their God, which is in Jerusalem. With this money, therefore, you shall diligently buy bulls, rams, and lambs, with their grain offerings and their libations, and offer them on the altar of the house of your God, which is in Jerusalem. And whatever seems good to you and to your brothers to do with the rest of the silver and the gold, you may do according to the will of your God. Also the utensils which are given to you for the service of the house of your God, deliver in full before the God of Jerusalem. And the rest of the needs for the house of your God, for which you may have occasion to provide, provide it from the royal treasury. And I, even I, King Artaxerxes, issue a decree to all the treasurers who are in the provinces beyond the river, that whatever Ezra the priest, the scribe of the law of God of heaven may require of you, it shall be done diligently, even up to 100 talents of silver, 100 cores of wheat, 100 baths of wine, 100 baths of oil, and salt as needed. Whatever is commanded by the God of heaven, let it be done with zeal for the house of God of heaven, lest there be wrath against the kingdom of the king and his sons. We also inform that it is not allowed to impose tax, tribute, or toll on any of the priests, Levites, singers, doorkeepers, Nethinim, or servants of the house of this house of God. And you, Ezra, according to the wisdom of your God, which is in your hand, appoint magistrates and judges, that they may judge all the people who are in the province beyond the river, even all those who know the laws of your God, you may teach, and anyone who is ignorant of them. And whoever will not observe the law of your God and the law of the king, let judgment be executed on him strictly, whether for death or banishment or for confiscation of goods or imprisonment." So we'll just stop there for now. So you get this letter that has been written, or a copy of this letter, this decree that has been made. And it's interesting that Ezra is, he's really taken care of by the king. If you start and you look at this, he says, you know, anything that you need, it's going to be provided. And it's interesting to me whenever he keeps calling out, whenever it's done, he says, according to the law of your God, which is in your hand. Notice the king always says, it's your God. He's not the king's God. But he realizes that they serve a God that is to be respected and honored. And he's their God. And he doesn't want to upset that offering or anything that Ezra would need in order to fulfill all of the sacrifices and the observances that need to take place for them to be right with God in this offering that they make daily, and, you know, even for Passover and all of these things, the king is going to make sure that they are taken care of. And what is interesting to me, he says, you know, I need to find my place here. He says, and to bring the silver and gold which the king and his council have freely offered to God of Israel, verse 15, whose dwelling is there in Jerusalem. He's talking about gold and silver that's been freely offered. So there is a heartfelt will that says, we want to give to the king, or give to the your God. And he tells Ezra, he says, with all the silver and gold, verse 16, you shall find in the whole province of Babylon, along with the free will offerings of the people and of the priests who offered willingly for the house of their God in Jerusalem. Now, notice what he tells him. He's specific, though. He tells him what to do with it. Verse 17, he says, with this money you shall, notice he says, diligently. In other words, you do something with purpose. You're not just trying to muddle by, but you're purposeful in what you're doing. You diligently buy bulls, rams, lambs, and the grain offerings, and everything that is needed for the offerings. You just buy it. It's going to be provided. It's going to be taken care of. Whatever, verse 18, whatever seems good to you. So he tells him whatever you need, and he says, and anything else that you might need. And to your brothers, to do with the rest of the silver, you do it according to the will of your God. You just take care of it. You please your God. And the utensils, verse 19, which are given to you for the service, deliver in full to the God of Jerusalem. You make sure that all of the utensils are returned and back. Now, I noticed one thing here, and verse 23 says, whatever is commanded by the God of heaven, let it be done with zeal. Who's that directed toward? Do you ever stop and think? This letter is written to Ezra, but who is that zeal? He says, let it be done with zeal. Who's supposed to have the zeal? Do you ever stop and think about that? A lot of times we gloss over some of the things we read. Is it not the people that are supposed to be providing and giving? You give to them and you do it with zeal. You do it with gladness in your heart. And he says why? Lest there be wrath against the kingdom of the king and his sons. So what is the king's real motive in providing for Ezra and everything that he needs? He's avoiding the wrath of God. He realizes, and if you remember, I made a statement early back about, you know, these kings understand and they know about God. He's not their God, but they know about God, and they realize that there's some pretty bad things that have happened to some of these kings because of God. We do not want to incur the wrath of God upon us. We want Him to bless us in what we do and who we are. Now, are they following His will all the time? Absolutely not. But they realize that they need God's blessing in order to remain in power. Verse 24. We also inform you that it is not allowed to impose tax, tribute, or toll on any of the priests. By the way, any of the money you need or anything that you need, you don't bother the priests, the Levites, the singers, the doorkeepers. In other words, anybody that has anything to do with the house of God and the service to the Lord, you don't mess with them. You leave them alone. You don't take money from them. You don't do anything. You support them. Verse 25, and you, Ezra, according to the wisdom of your God, again, you see, you're God. And he's letting Ezra be the one that knows what is best and what's needed. Why? Because he realizes that God's hand is with him. And we're going to see more about how he knows that and what's really going to take place here in the next chapter. But he says, according to the wisdom of your God, which is in your hand, appoint magistrates and judges that they may judge all the people who are in the province beyond the river, even those who know the law. Now notice he says, let's judge the people who know the law. And And remember, he's teaching the law. He's a scribe. And he's teaching the law. And he's, you know, also practicing it. But he says, now you appoint people to judge and watch over these people, those who know the law, and also to teach those who are ignorant. So is he providing for people to know the truth? You can't have discipline without instruction. I hope I've said that right. Did I say that right? I think I said that right. A lot of times, we want to discipline somebody for doing something wrong when they really don't even know that it's wrong. That's not discipline, really. That's just unfair judgment. And you've heard the analogies a lot of times whenever we raise children. If we don't teach them right and wrong, how can you expect them to know if you don't teach them? If you teach them and you instruct them, and then they choose to go astray, then you get discipline. But it's interesting here, the king says, those who don't know the law, you teach them. He wants them to know what's according to the will of God. And it's imperative, you'll see why here in a minute. And whoever will not observe the law of your God and the law of the king. So here's why. There's a judgment to come down. Whoever will not observe the law of your God and the law of the king. Notice the law of God now becomes the law of the king. It's a decree. So you're going to follow your God. It's the king's decree. So if you're not going to follow your God, wrath is going to come from the king. Let judgment be executed on him strictly, rather for death. That's pretty severe, isn't it? Or executed on him for death, or for banishment, or for confiscation of goods, or for imprisonment. So these judges, or these magistrates, or whatever, who are to judge, evidently are going to have to make a determination of what's the discipline that's got to be imposed. So you see that the king has taken care of Ezra and provided, if you will, everything that he needs in order to go back and continue, if you will, the worship that is taking place and is going to take place in Jerusalem at the house of God. Verse 27. It's interesting to me. This is Ezra's giving credit to the God, or his God. Blessed be the Lord, the God of our fathers, who has put such a thing in this king's heart to adorn the house of the Lord, which is in Jerusalem, and has extended loving kindness to me before the king and his counselors and before all the king's mighty princes. Thus I was strengthened, and according to the hand of the Lord my God upon me, I gathered leading men from Israel to go up with me. So who's really been in control of all of this? The king? No. The king just wrote the decree. But notice, Ezra gives all the credit to God. And he says that he's put this thing in the king's heart, and he's taken care of everything that's needed for the Lord's house. Everything. And the king, because of God and his hand being upon Israel, God is showing loving kindness to Ezra. But not only Ezra, all those that are going to go with him. Thoughts or comments before we hit chapter 8? I know I kind of pushed through that, but I want to try and get a lot of 8 done if we can. Okay, chapter 8. Now, chapter 8 opens up, and it's a recording, if you will, of the number of people who returned with Ezra to Jerusalem. So, I'm not going to read all of these names, but he says, verse 1, now these are the heads of the fathers' households, the genealogical enrollment of those who went up with me from Babylon in the reign of King Artaxerxes. And so he gives this whole list all the way down through verse 14. So you're going to get a lineage of people and who all went. What I do want to say is, you know, a lot of times we gloss over something like that. And we go, well, it's really not important. It is important. And yet, you know, if you go back and you see the original people that were listed, God knows who these people are. It's important to God, or he wouldn't have had it written down. It's important, if you will, for these people because they track lineage. But it's important because God knows who these people are, and he calls them out by name. So don't discount these people. They're important to God. He knows who they are in their hearts. But I want to pick up in verse 15. So verse 15 says, "Now I assembled them at the river that runs to Ahava, where we camped for 3 days, and when I observed the people and the priests, I did not find any Levites." So you notice they're getting ready to take the journey. They're getting ready to go. They went to the river. They're camped there for 3 days. And what is Ezra, what's the first thing that he really notices now? We've got all of these people gathered that are listed, verse 2 through 14. What's he notice? We don't have any Levites. We got a problem. So he has to deal with that. So he says, verse 16, "I sent for Eleazar, Ariel, Shemaiah, Elnathan, I'll get it right here, Jerob, Elnathan, Nathan, Zechariah, Meshulam, leading men, and for Jorob and Elnathan, teachers. I sent them to Edo, the leading man of the place, Casiphia, and told them what to say to Edo and his brothers, the temple servants at the place of Casiphia, that is to bring ministers to us for the house of our God." So he engages, or if you will, pulls these people together and he says, we got to have Levites. We can't go to Jerusalem and not have Levites. That's just a given. Levites are like an integral part of worship. So he enlists some people and he says, go find somebody. In verse 18, notice again, "And according to the good hand of our God upon us, they brought us a man of insight of the sons of Mahala, the son of Levi, the son of Israel, namely Shabiah, and his sons and brothers, 18 men. So Ezra sends some people to find some Levites, and sure enough, they come back, and they've got 20 men. Well, now we can go. And 220 of the temple servants, whom David and the princes had given for the service of the Levites, all of them designated by name. So he got an abundance of people. He got Levites, and then he also got temple servants, which are needed also. "Then I proclaimed a fast there at the river of Ahava, that we might humble ourselves before our God to seek from him a safe journey for us, our little ones, and all our possessions." Why do you think he would do that? Before you read on. Why do you think that he would proclaim a fast? They've been there for 3 days. They're getting ready. They finally got the troops together. They're all ready to go. And he always says, wait a minute. We need to fast. Well, remember, they've got all of this gold and all of this silver and all of these utensils and all of this thing. And, of course, there's all of these people, and they're going to go on this big, long trip for months with little children and women and anybody whose heart was moved and wanted to go back to Jerusalem. You're going to make this trek. What do you think you're going to encounter during that time? Hardship? Bandits? Any of you ever played that card game called the Oregon Trail? How many of you ever made it to Oregon? I did. The horse died as I walked across the finish line. How hard can a trek like that be unless you've got the good hand of God with you? So he proclaims a fast, but here's the whole purpose of it. Remember, the king would have given him anything he wanted. He could have said, King, can you send troops with me and help me and help us all make it? And would the king have said, absolutely? You know he would have. Verse 22, for I was ashamed to request from the king troops and horsemen to protect us from the enemy on the way, because we had said to the king, now notice, why does the king know so much about their God? I proclaim to the king, the hand of our God is favorably disposed to all those who seek him, but his power and his anger against all those who forsake him. Why do you think the king is taking care of everything that Ezra wants and needs? And he says, whatever you need, whatever you want, you take it. Because the good hand of your God is with you. I know that to be true. And Ezra says, I was ashamed to even ask for horsemen or help because I have proclaimed to this king the whole time, God is with us because our heart is set on serving him. He'll take care of us. Do you think Ezra really believed that in his heart when he told the king that? Yes. Do we really believe that whenever we encounter things or whenever we're getting ready to do something or face something or whatever? Do we really believe that God would be with us and get us through it? I would hope that we do. He says, I was ashamed to even ask. His power and anger against those who forsake him. So we fasted and sought our God concerning this matter, and he listened to our entreaty. So what was the fast about? Humbling themselves totally before God and saying, I'm pouring myself out here and I'm putting it all in your hands. We're going to make this trip and you're going to protect us because you said you would. I'm going to believe you and hold you to that. Let's see. Somewhere in Matthew, I think I read that if we will seek him with all of our heart, mind, soul, and strength, he will provide what we need. Do we really believe that? It's easy to quote. A little harder to follow sometimes, maybe, yes. Ezra is saying that he wants to prove his faith in God, the God that he trusts, to prove it to the king. And he believes it with all of his heart. So, the people fasted. They listened to God. They're going to do it his way. You'll notice this whole thing, as we begin Ezra, and the people are going back and they're rebuilding. What are they doing? They're listening to God. They're listening to the law. They're learning that we need to get back in that relationship that we once had and lost with God. We need to listen to him and do it his way. So, where am I at? Verse 33. And on the fourth day, the silver and the gold and the utensils were weighed out in the house of our God unto the hand of Meremoth, the son of Uriah the priest, and with him was Eleazar, the son of Phinehas, and with him were the Levites, Jozabad, the son of Jeshua, and Noadad, the son of Benui, everything was numbered and weighed, and all the weight was recorded at that time. So they get there, they take care of the things that they need to take care of, they've weighed the silver and the gold, and so I want you to notice verse 35. The exiles who had come from captivity offered burnt offerings to the God of Israel, 12 bulls for all Israel, 96 rams, 77 lambs, 12 male goats for a sin offering, all as a burnt offering to the Lord. So they're going to offer these sacrifices after they've taken care of the business that they need to. And you'll notice the 12 bulls, all for Israel. I take that to be the 12 tribes of Israel. 96 rams, 77 lambs, 12 male goats for a sin offering, all for a burnt offering to the Lord. All as a burnt offering. Now, what is a burnt offering really about? Okay. I give you everything. I'm humbling myself before you. I'm humbling my heart and giving you everything that I've got, because the burnt offering, when you do the burnt offering, everything is used up. You don't save anything from it. So what you're doing is you're telling God, I'm giving you everything. So here they are. They're going to give God their heart. They're going to give God everything. How often have they really done that? And then they don't. How often have we give God our all and then we don't? Sometimes we let life get in the way. But here they are. They are dedicated at this point. But we're going to see things change pretty severely here shortly. Then they delivered the king's edicts to the king's satraps and to the governors in the provinces beyond the river, and they supported the people in the house of God. So the king's letter, when they get back, this decree, is now delivered to all of these people. And what's taking place? They're giving, if you will, everything just like the king said. This is what you do. And if you don't, there's punishment involved. So, there's a few things that I want to bring out about this. Before I go on, is there anything anybody wants to bring up? Or I know I kind of went through this a little bit, but okay. There's a lot of repetition in these verses about the good hand of God. And as I was studying this and I got to thinking about the good hand of God, do we really stop and really think about the good hand of God in our life? Do we ever see the good hand of God in our life? Have you ever stopped and really contemplated that? In your life, something that you're looking at and it didn't turn out the way you thought it should, but it turned out. And it wasn't a disaster. And it actually increases your faith. There's so many things that we go through in life, if we'll just be on the lookout and see, God is working in our lives all the time. So I'm going to encourage us as we go through this week and on through the rest of our days, that we be looking at the good hand of God and realize that He's there. And He wants to bless us and care for us and lead us in the right direction. And He can't if we won't. Another thing that I thought about is Ezra has devoted himself to studying God's law, doing God's law, teaching God's law. Now, if we want to see the good hand of God, and we see how He blessed Ezra, does this give us maybe a little bit of an idea of something we need to emulate or follow after? If I want to see the good hand of God, maybe I need to study a little more. Maybe I need to try and practice a little more about what I read and see that I need to do. And I know I've said this before, and I'll always say this. I'll stand by this. Not all people are meant to stand up and teach a big class. I get that. As a matter of fact, James says, not many of you be teachers. I get that. But we teach in just the way we live. People see us day after day after day. What do they see? Do they see you living for Christ? Do they see you living in such a way that you're different than the rest of the world? That's teaching. And sometimes people will ask, And there's your opportunity to plant a seed, to sow something that, that helps somebody come to know salvation. Or maybe it's just to teach our children. They're back there learning too tonight, aren't they? But this is not the only time that they need to learn. As parents and grandparents, we have a responsibility to teach them and encourage them about God, about His will, about His law. There's a lot more than just sitting down and reading your Bible. You need to read it to understand it. I talk to people several times and they go, well, you know, I read the Bible all the time. That's good. And they say, but I don't understand it. Well, maybe you need to read to understand. Or maybe you just need to ask somebody for some help. You know, we have a lot of qualified people here who'd be happy to talk to somebody. Ezra looked for the good hand of God, and everything that he did, he attributed to the good hand of God being upon him and everything that he did. So do we do that? I'm reminded, I wrote this scripture down. Paul in 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 7, he says, what do you have that you did not receive and have received it? Why do you boast as if you did not receive it? The Corinthians had a lot of things. They had a lot of blessings. But their boasting was in the wrong thing. Always remember that anything that we accomplish, it's not by our accomplishments. It's because God has blessed us with the ability to do it, or has blessed us with whatever it is that we encounter to be able to succeed in it. It's never about what we can do. It's always about God. So why should we act like we've done something spectacular in our lives whenever it's God who gave us the ability? Again, looking for the good hand of God. The other thing, we need to humble ourselves before God. Boy, that's hard for me sometimes. You ever struggle with being humble? We like to be right. We like to have our way. We like to have it the way we think it should be. And a lot of times, you know, you'll stop and, you know, sometimes you'll visit with people about God and they'll say, well, you know, I read that, but I really don't believe it that way. Well, that's what it said. How can you argue with God's word? But they want to do it their own way. They're not willing to humble themselves down to do God's will and to follow His word. Psalm 121. Have I got time? Let's go to Psalm 121. We'll end there. This is like a psalm of humility. Andy can tell you all about psalms. This is like a psalm of humility to realize that God is our help and He's where our protection comes from. Verse 1, I will lift up my eyes to the mountains. From whence shall my help come? My help comes from the Lord, who made heaven and earth. He will not allow your foot to slip. He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is your keeper. The Lord is your shade on your right hand. The sun will not smite you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will protect you from all evil. He will keep your soul. The Lord will guard your going out and your coming in from this time forth and forever. If we really want to seek Him with a whole heart, and humble ourselves right there, you can know that God is there and He will be there for you and protect you. He says, verse 7, He will keep your soul. No matter what's going on in this life, what's most important, Is it this life or is it about eternity? What are we doing here? Are we not working our way toward eternity? Or striving to get to eternity? Striving to get to that goal? It says, the Lord will guard your going out and your coming in from this time and forever. Is there any time in between all that he's not there? I don't know about you, but I find it, I can't imagine it in my mind's eye, a God who can sit and look down upon all of the earth and all of the billions of people and know everything that's going on and see all that. And he knows what's going on everywhere all the time. And to be able to sit there and go, you know, I've got you going and coming, Mike. Put your name in there. I've got you going and coming. Just seek me first. Ezra had the courage because he knew God's hand was with him. And he knew if he did God's bidding and strive to do his will, that God would be with him. And he's not willing to back down.